Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and today we're talking about the art of cartooning. My guests here are determined to open a museum dedicated to cartoon art here in the Pacific Northwest, and I'll be asking them how the project is going. Mike Rosen is the board chair at the Northwest Museum of Cartoon Arts. Sean Nguyen is the founder and customer relations manager at Strange Solutions. He's also keeper of the records at NW Mocha. Michael Ring is the owner of Bridge City Comics and treasurer at NW Mocha. And Katie Pride is the proprietor at Books with Pictures, a community mainstay here in Portland, and she's a friend of the show. Mike, Sean, Michael, Katie, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Mike, we noted that you're the board chair at Northwest Museum of Cartoon Arts. So let's start with you. There are museums of comic and cartoon art in San Francisco, in New York City, in Columbus, Ohio, and in my one-time hometown of Brussels, Belgium. What would be different about Northwest Mocha?
Well, one of the things that we try to emphasize is our values. And one of our values is celebrating diversity in the artists and the art. We want to create opportunities for the next generation. So we're all about future cartoon arts lovers and creators. And one of the ones that I'm really proud of is literacy and young adult education. We want to make connections that way. We're all about Pacific Northwest origins and higher education. And so aside from just being a static museum, I see us as an education institute. One of the unique things is we aspire for the museum to be a living space where we actually have a maker space where cartoonists and artists and writers can hang out during the day and actually create with tablets and printers and binders. And then in the afternoon, we can bring students in to also create. And it's the opportunity to really combine art and technology, and people can create a product while they're there. So I think that those are some of the things that set us apart from your more, what I would call a static museum.
I'd also, to throw in my two cents, I would like to consider us as a living museum, kind of like what Mike had mentioned, in that we're not only going to be looking at the past and the things that brought us to this, but we're also going to be looking towards the future, and we're going to be showcasing up and coming artists, local artists, things like that too. So we're going to, I feel like in addition to the educational, we're going to have a foot in the past and also a foot in the future. Right. As cartoon arts in the Pacific Northwest.
But since you mentioned it, Mike, I think what also will make us stand out is because of the fact that the Pacific Northwest does indeed have a rich past. I mean, our community is already built to have a museum. We have a rich history in cartooning. And so, honestly, I feel like we're just not taking advantage. We're taking that opportunity to really showcase and highlight that, because the people that have performed here within the industries have been influential around the world. And I think that's one of the things that we also want to bring some attention to let people know that, like, a lot of cool stuff actually started here, or like we kept it going in certain ways, and how impactful it has been just in this region. Honestly, I wouldn't mind adding on a study of even how that happened to begin with for the museum itself.
Yeah, to piggyback on Sean, I really feel that if anything, a museum of cartoon arts here in the Pacific Northwest is overdue. That we are, as you know, Conch, we are a place that is central for multiple major comics publishers, many comics artists, as well as animation studios. And really, I love that I get to own a store that is a major community center for comics in Portland. But retail outlet is not always what you need for the sort of core of a community. I love being, to the extent that I am, but I really feel like a place for people who come to Portland because it is a comics hub have needed somewhere to go for a long time. If you go to the Image Studios, you will find them maybe, and then meet a nice secretary who will tell you to go away. Likewise, Dark Horse. So there's really, even though there's so much comics happening here right now, there's not a lot you can do as a person who is interested in comics here right now. So I'm really hoping that the museum can fill that hole.
And I just want to add one thing that I think, to my chagrin, nobody else mentioned, is we have a brand manager. And I'll tell you that no other museum in the world or in the United States has this. And it's Milk the Siamese Cat. And we're really proud of that, that we represent not only humankind, but the animal kingdom.
We wouldn't be anywhere without Milk.
Well, Katie, I appreciate the shout out there for the show here. Words and Pictures has been on the air for 19 years. And in that time, yeah, we've had no shortage of talent who are able to come on the show. Folks from Oni, from Dark Horse, from Helioscope Studios, which is not a company. It's just a wonderful loose collective of people who like to support each other, artists and writers. But, you know, in those 19 years, Portland has become less of an affordable place for artists to be artists.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's something I think about and talk about almost, if not daily, definitely multiple times per week. I think that the artists, though, or the creators in general, are smart enough to know that while this is still a hub, we just may have to might change tactics on how we enter this community. We are now living in a time where you're seeing a lot more couples with roommates, you know, and things of that nature. So I myself being one of them, but I think it can still happen. It's just a matter of properly navigating how we survive.
You know, I think that's a really good point too. And it's going to be interesting in terms of us finding a permanent home, because space is at a premium in terms of costs. But one of the things that I've really, having been in the area almost 40 years now, you've really seen the progression of artists in terms of starting their careers, moving into national prominence in Portland. But I will say that the more I talk to artists, the more I become aware of how hard they work to make a living, whether it's drawing or writing.
Yeah. Well, right now, the museum is looking to start out with a pop-up space while right. You search for a permanent location.
Right. And we can't tell you where it is, because they won't let us tell you where it is until we sign a lease, but we actually have a great space at an incredible price at an incredible location in Portland, and we're working right now to finalize that. We've been really lucky. One thing I will say about that is the downtown core is definitely hurting, and there are some real estate owners that are really looking for opportunities to revitalize downtown. And one example I would give is, I don't know if you know about this, but there was a pop-up exhibit in the old Banana Republic space, Dinolandia, that was very successful. And so I think that we're going to see more things like that in downtown Portland. You're already seeing, like in Lloyd Center, a new approach to a business model, not high-end stores, but community-based businesses, which is where Floating World Comics has recently moved to.
Along with an indie vinyl store as well.
Right. Yeah.
And I hear that if you know the right people, you can get a 3,000-foot space for $250 a month.
I hear that as well, although I think that we may not be tapped into quite those right people.
I think we're just a canvassing.
Yeah, I'll tell you that when we announce our space, I think people are going to be really surprised. Yep. So,
well, you mentioned being part of a learning community and a sort of a mentoring community, and you have all of these folks who are in academia who are part of your board. Mm-hmm. And one of them, friend of the show, Ben Saunders, English professor at the University of Oregon, who directs the minor in comics and cartoon studies. He's been quoted as saying, "You can't throw a muffin in a coffee shop without hitting a cartoonist here in Portland. Also from the University of Washington, Dr. Jose Analiz and Dr. Charles Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talked to a lot of people about this idea in the Northwest, and I think there's a real eagerness. And I think Katie mentioned this too. If the time is right, there's an eagerness and a hunger for this. All of those people, like for instance, Charles Johnson has been a cartoonist for decades, as well as a National Book Award winner. Jose Alaniz, he's a Slavic studies professor, but he has a passion for not only writing and drawing, but also a really intense study of the cartoon arts. His latest book, which I would call thesis, is Comics in the Post-Soviet Union. So some really interesting people on the board, and I'm really happy that we have. When we talked about building the board, we did talk about building an academic component, and I think we've achieved that.
I also want to underline, though, with Ben Saunders in particular, that he is an academic and an academic administrator, but he has also got major museum chops. I am maybe most excited to have Ben on this project. So the Marvel traveling exhibit that started up at MoPOP in Seattle and has just landed, I think, for its final outing at OMSI here in Portland, but has traveled the whole country in the last 3 years, is his project. He's the director of that. And additionally, the long-term Spider-Man exhibit that's down in the Comic-Con Museum in San Diego is also Ben's project. So his skills with museum design and museum administration, I think, make him even more an asset to this board than his academic skills, although he's fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of a double whammy there. I'm really proud to have him on board as well. And as well as the other educators we have, like Mike was saying, you know, when they first approached me about this project and he told me what he wanted to do, and I got to hear about all the amazing people involved, you know, Charles Johnson being a hero of mine anyway. And I was like, okay, they're really serious about this education aspect. I was like, yeah, I'm full on board. Let's get this out to everybody.
Another heavy hitter you have is you've got a curator in Andrew Farrago, who is with the Cartoon Art Museum in San Francisco. So yeah, a lot of people really want to see this project come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really appreciate Andrew's help. He was one of the first people I talked to, because I'd say, in terms of a model, the Cartoon Art Museum in San Francisco is probably closest to what we would look like. And one of the first things I asked him, knowing that we would be hard pressed to have staff early on, was if he would assist with curation. And I really appreciate the generosity of his time and the generosity of the museum board in San Francisco, allowing us to use him.
So another thing that's going on is that you're really tackling a wide swath of the narrative arts here, the creative arts. You know, it's not just newspaper comics, comic books, but you're also dealing with political cartooning. You're dealing with animation. Yeah, the animation scene in Portland tends to be different from its counterparts along the West Coast in Los Angeles and the Bay Area. We're more hand-hewn here, less into computer-generated imagery. Portland's become a hub for stop motion animation with companies like Bent Image Lab, House Special, Shadow Machine, and Leica Studios.
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely something that we've talked about, because just like we recognize that, you know, we have all these major publishers here, the, you know, the animation studios, like we would be fools not to reach out to them to say that we want to show your history and show the talents and how you've grown and highlight that for the Pacific Northwest.
You know, one thing I would say about that, too, is that it is true that the animation approach in the Portland area is unique. I mean, it's really stop motion based, at least at Leica. But I had the rare opportunity to tour Leica Studios. And the thing that amazed me about Leica Studios, it's like a science, technology, engineering, art, and math concentrated in one place. And they hire cartoonists. Every time they make a movie, they storyboard it and animate it the same way you would do a straight animation movie. They have engineers making the metal frames for the stop motion figures. They have artists that actually do the modeling. They have wood construction builders. It's a really amazing place. And when I talk about the makerspace, I really get into the concept of we have an opportunity to merge art and technology in one place for students.
And also the name of the museum is Cartoon Arts. Like, there was a conscious choice to not call it the Museum of Comic Arts, because we wanted to kind of cast this wide net. And the great thing is about art, in many ways, there's a lot of dovetailing with comics art or traditional art or this kind of stuff too. So it's a great way to kind of put a big umbrella over all of it and give it a place to live.
Now, Sean, you're the keeper of the records for the museum. And what's that been like? Sounds like some pretty heavy lifting there.
You know, it has been some heavy lifting, but it's been absolute fun. Because I've actually been spending a lot of time with Mike, with Dr. Mike Rosen, I'm kidding. And traveling with him, like our last endeavors were hitting up Emerald City Comic Con and then Rose City Comic Con, and just meeting different creators and letting them know about the museum and spreading the word. But, you know, I'm trying to take down the details of who we meet, who's agreed to work with us, and like what endeavors we've had so far, so that I can release proper newsletters in the future. Because one of the things we want to do is be as transparent as possible on our site about everything we intend to do and what we've actually accomplished. I'll even go as far as to say, like, hey, we didn't make this endeavor, you know, and now we're going to redouble our efforts and like put that back out into the community. Because if we're going to claim to be community focused, we need to start here right now. So my job is definitely to keep note or keep track of that. I think the most important thing that I've documented so far was on the road with Mike. I did find that he is addicted to Wordle. And I think I need to highlight that as much as possible, because, you know, the whole highlight for the trip was that he got Wordle in 2 one day. That's and that was the topic of discussion for 3 days after that. And I want our community to know who they're dealing with here. Okay. You got Wordle on 2. It's a big deal.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Sean. I want to, Sean's a perfect, and I'm blowing over that quickly. Sean's a perfect example of the richness of our board. One of Ben Saunders said, you know, you can't toss a muffin at someone in a coffee shop in Portland and not hit a cartoonist. You can't walk 2 steps in a convention hall with Sean and now not run into someone that he knows. And he's really got an incredible number of contacts that have been really helpful to us, whether it's artists or writers or publishers. He's just a great resource for us, and I really appreciate that. And I would say that that's indicative of the rest of the board too. On bad days, I think, oh my God, our board is humongous. On good days, I think, wow, you know, it's going to take a village to build this museum. And I really have appreciated the commitment of the board and all their unique talents in moving this along so quickly.
Well, you do have, I mean, you've got what, over 20 people on the board, right? And in, you know, in your credit, you involve a whole lot of creative people, not just museum folks or money folks.
I mean, the thing that excites me most about this project, aside from it being fun, is the strength of the board. I mean, all the people on the board have strong connections in this community and are invested in this community. And the origin of the project really started with Anina Bennett had a Facebook memory come up about the Oregon Historical Society comics exhibit. And I think, Katie, you might have been the first person that commented and said, we need a permanent exhibit.
Yeah, I've been yelling about it for a while, but right. You know, my plate is very full, so it's something I'm very passionate about and also can't do. So,
but Anina and Katie and I met for coffee, and that was really the seed of all of this. What I've said is there's an embarrassment of riches in the Northwest. There's artists, writers, there's publishers, there's historians, there's university programs, there's collectors, and every one of them that I've talked to are, you know, feeling like the same way that we've all mentioned. The time is right for something like this.
Yeah, you mentioned Anina Bennett, who is a celebrated writer and activist in the comics community. And you've got, Andy Johnson, co-owner of Cosmic Monkey Comics, Debbie Smith of Excalibur Comics, really well-established venues. But you also mentioned Fantagraphics up in Seattle. And you're not calling this museum the Oregon Museum of Cartoon Art. You're calling it the Northwest Museum of Cartoon Art. So you're definitely... plan to bring in folks from across the Columbia, even though this is a Portland-based organization.
Yeah, you know, not only do we have a great board, but we have a pretty incredible advisory board. And Eric Reynolds from Fantagraphics is on the advisory board. And behind the scenes, some of the things we're all doing is we're getting ready for our Kickstarter campaign, which is designed to fund the pop-up. And Fantagraphics is all in. I asked them if they would loan original art to the exhibit, and they said yes, and if they would contribute to the Kickstarter campaign. And it is really important to acknowledge that the Pacific Northwest, from I think our perspective, extends from Northern California to Washington to Idaho. Jose Alaniz has talked about including British Columbia. I mean, and we have artists all over the place in the Pacific Northwest. It's pretty amazing. And so the museum is going to reflect that.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, SW Conser. And we're talking today about the Northwest Museum of Cartoon Arts, which is set to open in 2023. My guests today are Mike Rosen, Sean Wynn, Michael Ring, and Katie Pride. So I know you're kind of keeping some things secret, but some of you folks, Mike and Michael and Sean and Katie, maybe you could say what would be your dream exhibit or your favorite activity to have going on in a space that the Museum of Cartoon Art occupies.
I have a secret that I can share just to you in this show. We're already thinking about our next exhibit, and the issues come up about manga. And we've actually been in touch with Junji Ito about bringing him to the United States and having a horror manga exhibit. And so the momentum is it just seems to be that snowball rolling down the hill. And I'm certain that we're going to be able to do stuff like that. And that would be an awesome thing to have, you know, just a manga exhibit represented at the museum. So I'm pretty excited about that right now.
And if you wonder what the connection is between manga and the Pacific Northwest, Dark Horse publishes a ton. Mm-hmm. And Kelly Sue DeConnick, long before she became the Kelly Sue DeConnick Captain Marvel that we all know, she used to, I believe, script translations for manga for Viz or Tokyo Pop. I believe she did that. So, and well, then there's other, you know, Susie Lee does lettering on the Dark Horse manga stuff.
Zach Davis.
I was going to say Zach Davis, and we would have to get down to from Seattle.
Right.
A lot of localization on manga.
Right. In fact, that was one of the people that Sean introduced me to, is Zach Davison. I went to one of his presentations. He did a really great panel on cats and comics. Yeah, there's a strong connection, and there's a variety of university level Asian studies programs that will contribute to this exhibit as well.
You know, you kind of touched on something that would be a dream project of mine for the museum. I would love to see an exhibit that literally was just cats and comics or cats and cartoons, because I'm a big cat guy. And, you know, if we could just collect cat art in various forms, I think that would be a hit show for all the cat lovers in general. But the other one is I'm also a huge toy and collectible guy. And I think there's room to have a translation one-time exhibit for the physical pieces that people have collected throughout the years that are based on cartoons or comics that have, like, you know, have a story to tell or historic. You know, there's a lot of that too.
Well, Sean, you may or may not know, Sean is a big customizer of action figures and stuff. So that would be another great kind of makerspace thing of, have people create action figures of the characters that they create for their stories. And not to volunteer you, Sean, but.
Well, it's something you should know then, and this will be something that you might like. When we get to that endeavor, I have already got Ibrahim Mustafa to agree to join me in leading that class.
Yeah.
Because I taught him how to customize, and now the student has become the master. And I would love to have him co-teach with him about that world.
So since you guys mentioned teaching, another exciting thing that's happened is I just wrote a grant for the Oregon Arts Commission, and we're partnering with Portland Public Schools and Wacom tablets, and it's to run two classes next summer for kids that are reading below grade level, Black and Indigenous communities, and we will take students for the second half of the day to the Wacom Experience Center, which they've generously donated to us. This is what's planned. And I think it will happen even if the grant doesn't come through. The museum will be able to invest in this. Aaron Steinke will be teaching the fourth and fifth graders, and Justin Zimmerman will be teaching the middle schoolers. But we've already got commitments from at least half a dozen local artists to make special appearances in the class. Jonathan Case, who just did Little Monarchs, Kelly Sudikonic, Matt Fraction, Mark Russell. The generosity of the arts community is pretty incredible. But I'm really excited. The pop-up is a proof of concept for the community to show that we can have a sustainable museum. And then also some of this class is a proof of concept that we can really show the connection between literacy and comics as a gateway to reading. And I'm having Wacom and Portland Public Schools invest in that is pretty exciting to me.
So for me, I go in two directions because my background is actually as an academic historian in a previous life. I spent a lot of time living in archives and teaching history classes and digging through old papers. And so one of the things that I would love, you know, a future well-funded version of the museum to be able to do is make sure that there is a home for Pacific Northwest artists' papers and collections, because not everybody has a family that's going to take care of these treasured things when they pass on. So I like the idea of the museum as a place that can take those documents as we lose a generation of people who were foundational in the Pacific Northwest development as a cartooning hub. And then also back in 2019, I actually think the first time I was on this show was because I was assistant curator in Lake Oswego for their arts festival, which we did. It was called Origin Stories, and it was a comic-centric exhibit that really focused on up-and-coming voices. I'm actually thrilled about, even just in the last, how does time work, 3.5 years since we did that, that Andrea Casales, who won our like Best of Show, has since gone on to do the DC Comics New Creators Program, and has work coming out in DC publications. So I really love having a role in elevating and building up local talent as they come into a professional sort of level. And I really do hope that the museum can have a dedicated space for exhibiting the work of folks who are maybe not well known yet and not established yet, but to put their name out there and put some credits on their resume and let them come into the industry as more established professionals because they have the museum support.
That's a great point, Katie. And one of the things we haven't talked about is we've made a commitment to an artists in residence program. And another exciting thing that's happening now is to actually set up the museum, you need an interior designer. And we just started a partnership with Portland State University to work with their interior design program, which means we'll be working with industry professionals and their students. We'll have the opportunity for credit and compensation to be setting up the exhibit for us.
I was just at the Zine Symposium a couple of weeks ago, and it's not such a big thing anymore in the age of Instagram to have actual saddle-stitched published stuff going around, but that's still a way for young folks to get their stuff out there.
The Zine Symposium is a great example, too, yeah, of a way that the museum can help. The Zine Symposium has been going on for a number of years, and it kind of bounces around to different places, but potentially forming a partnership with them, and if and when we get a permanent space, giving them a permanent space to have this event once a year, and that way it's just locked in. They don't have to worry about renting a spot. They don't have to worry about availability. It's just whatever the date is, it's this date every year at this location every year. And I think that would help to grow attendance back and participation back for the Zine Symposium, because zines are also a form of cartoon arts.
I mean, not always. Sometimes they're just a lot of writing. Just a lot of work.
Sometimes, yeah.
But
absolutely
true.
But I'm very excited about the educational aspect of the museum. And one thing that I really love about comics is it's such a democratic art form in that anybody can do it. You may not be great at it, but you can do it. All you need is a piece of paper and a writing utensil. And the educational aspect is a way for us to help our community to be able to tell their stories, to be able to, you know, talk about what they go through, their histories, the trials and tribulations that they go through that not everybody may know about. And so that's very exciting for me. And then one other aspect of comics that I really like, at least superhero comics, are kind of the modern mythologies. I would love to see an exhibit where we can tie comics into kind of the classical literature and explore that, but also give people educationally a way to also tell their stories, maybe through that, through cultural icons and things like that. I mean, I hope that makes sense what I'm saying.
No, it makes sense to me, and I'm so glad you said that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So, that's a Ben Saunders fascination, and also Doug Wolk.
Yeah.
So can I tell a funny story?
Wait, can I say something to piggyback on what Ring said first? I'm glad you said that too, because, and I'm glad we're talking about zines, because that is something I would love to focus on. But in the way of that, zines have also kind of lent way to the sticker art society, especially like there's an underground sticker art society here in Portland and in Seattle that we could, if we could get the right context and resources, there's a great story to be told there. But it also, it transitions into graffiti art based on cartooning, which is definitely a big thing still in the Pacific Northwest. The hip hop and comics is something I'm very passionate about too. And I would love for them to like curate a small section on that, like they do for New York Comic Con or San Diego every year, you know?
So I do want to emphasize, we have a home for small press expositions. One of the things that Andrew Farrago has said is that they're doing education programs in San Francisco as well. And he said the demand for zines among students and adults is really high. I just wanted to give two examples of the reach of the Portland community across the nation. I had the opportunity to be at New York Comic Con a few days ago, trying to market the museum to artists and publishers, but I was standing in front of, I don't remember the name of the publisher, but they're from London and they published 2000 AD.
Rebellion.
Okay. And I was looking at a compilation of, you know, like the best of 2000 AD, like trying to figure out whether I should buy it or not. And all of a sudden from the distance, this voice yells out, "You should buy that. That is like one of the greatest books. And I'm telling you this, I don't even work for this booth. And that's the story." And I look over and it's Douglas Wolk.
Sure is.
And I'm like, "I know you, you're Douglas Wolk, and I'm going to buy it." Mm-hmm. And then the other story was, which really talks about the power of comics. I went to the New York Department of Education presentation at Comic-Con in New York, where they were talking about using comics to teach civics. And I always forget his name, but the March series.
John Lewis.
And then Aiden, I can't remember Aiden's last name, but he was his aide that helped him write March. So he was part of the panel. And several people on the panel were thanking Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue DeConnick for contributing to those comics. And I'm sitting there with my little iPad and I send a quick email to Kelly Sue DeConnick to say, "Hey, you got to know that we're on the East Coast and people are talking about you guys." I mean, it's just like you can't throw a muffin in New York and not hit a Portland comic book rock star.
Nice.
You've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we've been talking today about the Northwest Museum of Cartoon Arts, which is set to open in 2023. My guests today are Mike Rosen, Sean Wynn, Michael Ring, and Katie Pride. Mike, Sean, Michael, and Katie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's a great time.
And for those listeners who might be interested in finding out more about NW MoCA, where would they look?
NWMoCA.org. It's got everything you want to know about it. You can sign up for our newsletter and learn even more.
You can also donate.
Yeah, you can do that.
And don't forget to follow us on all of the social media channels.
Right, yeah.
Well, all right. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on social media at Words and Picture.